Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
What a prize.
It's amazing. It would be wonderful to go. Unfortunately, I wasn't allowed to bring my phone into the studio, so I won't be able to text.
I'm not even buying any of that. I saw you texting feverishly on the way in. But Owen, that's not why we have you here. Today, we want to talk about competition in the workplace. It's something that the vast majority of us deal with on a daily basis, whether we like it or not, to some degree or other. And it can be an undercurrent in teams, departments, offices. But as we know, competition can very quickly turn to ruthlessness. There's often a very fine line when it comes to promotions and job interviews that really intensifies things. And a former employee of Apple made headlines worldwide yesterday when he unveiled the truth behind Apple's extreme competitive culture. So Owen McDermott is here from the Communications Clinic and he's joining us to help us navigate this really kind of complicated and delicate world of getting ahead at work. So
yes,
Owen, you're
indeed.
Very welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, you know, let's have a look first of all at the Apple situation.
This was a gentleman called Ben Farrell based in Australia who kind of had a tell-all after he left, which is quite unusual and very rare that it actually happens. And I think that may be a little bit of indicative of how accurate is the story. It was terrible. He talked about that there were calls at midnight that he would, when issues with his wife and her pregnancy came up, that there was difficulty about taking time off, that when he would take miss certain meetings, there'd be trouble. Sunday nights were always working when he should be off. So he painted a really terrible picture. I would say it's kind of odd because there's 90,000 people working in Apple and we rarely ever hear about a bad story. Now, maybe that's because they're gagged or he's just a once-off. So it's hard to judge, but the story that he has told is terrible. I think part of it is one of the big things is the time issue, that he was taking calls late at night and at bad times. That's something, though, that isn't just specific to him or into Apple. It tends to actually really happen quite frequently in multinational companies that where there are offices in different time zones. For example, that Asia would be 7 hours ahead of Ireland and Ireland 6 hours ahead of America. That means that people in Asia might be on their calls quite late at night, Ireland in the middle of the day and America in the morning. So that can create some of those issues for people if the timings aren't gone through. So I can see that it would cause difficulty, but the argument could be made he kind of might have known what he was letting himself in for.
Two sides you've just painted there, but it does seem to be, you know, as you said, that idea as well. We're working more and more multinational companies are here, and it is a case of if your boss is working, they presume you are, no matter what time of the day it is, or day or night. But that maybe needs to be something that's cleared up from the beginning, from the get-go.
Certainly. They're the kind of ground rules that should be put in place, because otherwise a habit develops. And if your boss sends you an email at 10:30 at night, and you are then in the habit of replying, there then suddenly becomes an expectation that you're going to reply.
Listen,
every time.
We've all been there. The first thing is a thank you for that favour. The second time is, oh, you couldn't just do that again. The third time it's expected.
Yeah, there's a kind of a conditioning. Human beings get conditioned with one another through repetitive behaviour. And if the behaviour becomes the same over and over again, whether it's a positive behaviour or one that isn't really constructive or good for us, the same thing happens. So that piece on getting emails sent late at night and then the response, if that happens 5 or 6 times, the boss becomes assuming that it's going to happen. So ground rules should be set. That again should be identified in the job description, the job spec when people are sitting down for a new job or reviewing and planning for the next year, that you can say, okay, well, there will be an expectation that I won't be on a call every night at 8 o'clock. But there should be some wiggle room. I'd always have hesitance to say, I'll never go on a call at 8, because then you kind of limit yourself a little bit. But there should be some ground rules put in place to make sure people don't get exploited.
But what about Owen in recent times in the recession? That idea of we're all and have been working harder, you know, we've been really kind of hard pressed. Everybody's doing more with less, okay? And sometimes competition in the workplace as well means that your colleague might be doing all of those things, and then that means the spotlight's on you if you're not.
It can. I would bring it back to what's the output of that. I've often seen people who work 14 hours a day and their output is no better than someone who's worked 8 hours, that they might be clocking in and staying longer, but they're just not producing good stuff. So there is that piece on what bosses should be looking at and making clear for their staff. And I think that's the big thing in any organisation, that the CEO, manager, whoever who is making these decisions and leading the organisation makes it clear on what people are being assessed on and valued on. So that working 14 hours might be impressive and gosh, it's hard work, but if the outcomes are no better, it's a waste of time.
Now,
so that that clarity has to be there. I think competition in the workplace isn't a bad thing. I actually think it can be incredibly productive. I think it can create actually really good morale if managed well. I think sport is always a good example that when people are competing for the same position, the team tends to do better and the player themselves gets better. But again, the responsibility is on the manager to maintain a good culture and a good camaraderie there. But competition shouldn't be tried to be dismissed. Now, there might be saying that that's a male perspective, because Stanford have done a lot of research into it that tends to find that males prefer competition and women kind of avoid it a little bit and are more cooperative and look to work with one another a little bit more. And they found that men, even incompetent men who aren't up for the job, are more competitive, and women who are competent and maybe very competent tend to again recoil and avoid competition. So it might be a male perspective of mine saying that competition is good, but I tend to find that the outcomes for organisations are improved if the organisation and leader sets the tone.
Stanford may have done that. It doesn't sit well though, Owen, with me. I don't like the sound of that, that women are not favouring competitive environments.
Totally, it's not. And what they have found though, what really changes that is encouragement. Encouragement from peers, encouragement from bosses, encouragement from mentors. And that they found that women will hold back a little bit, but if they're encouraged to progress, that their careers develop wonderfully. And again, that's back to the culture within an organisation. Yes, you can have a competitive, but if you have one that is sense of fostering people, of developing people, of encouraging people, of course you should have women going for jobs and coming through. But it is something that is worth coming through, like prepping people for job interviews. It tends to be women who will often come in and say, am I really good enough for this job? And you're looking at their CV and saying, gosh, yeah. But you'd never really have a guy ask you that question. They'll put it in, sure, we'll see what happens. And if organisations or someone listening to this are thinking, am I not good enough, that probably you should try and do it and apply for roles or apply for positions or take on projects in the workplace, because invariably you'll find you'll learn on the job, or you never know, you might be good enough already.
That message, lean in, as we
read. Indeed.
What was her name?
Cheryl Sandberg.
There you go, between us.
From Facebook. She is their COO in Facebook.
Exactly. And did she work with Google, I think, before that?
Yeah.
Now, you know, but what about when competition can be bad? So we were talking about the advantages of it, how it spurns everybody, you know, it spurs everybody on. But what about the bad side?
I think obviously competition can get and can create a toxic environment. Partly it's back to people don't know what they're being assessed on. So they begin to pit each other against one another, and looking at their colleague as their target rather than their job as their target. The famous story of the two ice skaters in the 94 Olympics, Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan, where they were competing for the gold in the Olympics and Nancy Kerrigan was attacked by Tanya Harding's boyfriend. I think that's quite an extreme example of where competition can go. But there, a version of that happens where bad mouthing can happen in the workplace. Bitching can happen. People are not being open and honest with their colleagues of what's going on. That can create, and that's a toxic environment to come through. But a lot of it comes back to bad management. Bad management, managers let this happen. There's a lack of clarity on people's roles, and it isn't nipped in the bud as early as possible. And that's the important aspect in competition, that it is not bitching, but in fact that it's that bit more cooperative than you would expect.
I think that's a really, really, really important point. And I'm not sure that we do enough, and when our managers are promoted, that they are management trained, because how else? This is a big responsibility on them. And also what you mentioned earlier about women, if women are fostered in the workplace, it's a win-win. If you don't foster them, they're going to be unhappy in their positions, they're overqualified. So you need to give them that opportunity to grow, just like with guys. But that's a lot of responsibility on management.
Totally. But the good example of a fellow I'm working with at the minute who has struggled with this since he became a manager. He was a superb salesman, and what happens to superb salesmen is they tend to be the best salesmen, so they get promoted to manager, but they're not managers.
Yes.
So he's struggled greatly on how does he create a team spirit, how does he again give people specific specific targets that work for them? How does he get the most out of his team? And how does he encourage his own staff members? Because he, again, only really worried about himself. And sales is probably a good example of roles that are very competitive. People tend to be very competitive, but often managers need to be aiming to cultivate their staff and to grow their staff rather than just focusing on the bottom line.
You see a great leader, you see a great manager, and they will always tell you that people around them are even better and more qualified than they were at that stage in that job.
Well, that's the trick, I think, with all management, is you hire people who are better than you. I think that's a good rule of thumb, because then just things get better. Where competition tends to get quite fraught, though, is in organisations where career progression doesn't happen very often. Public service is a good example. Teaching is a good example, where there can be a whole load of teachers, one principal and a deputy principal and a couple of posts of responsibility. So when those jobs come up, it can be like
a bottleneck,
and also all hell breaks loose in the staff room because they're all pitted against each other. And regularly we would work with teachers prepping them for those interviews who are saying, gosh, the atmosphere in the staff room is terrible. How do I manage that? Do I tell people I'm going for the job? Do I not? And the best, I find the best policy is honesty, that you tell people you're going for it. You don't necessarily have to tell them all the prep you're doing and all the thinking you're doing for it, but that if you keep things secret from your colleagues about competitions you're involved in, it tends to create, again, that toxic, secretive environment, which isn't healthy.
It's fear. People are frightened of what's going on amongst, maybe they feel they're missing out on things that are happening around them.
Yeah, and also that if you look, there's kind of a couple of things that the research has suggested that people care about in the workplace. One is good leadership, but also the kind of two which I think are quite relevant to competition are being seen as relevant, getting recognition and having career opportunities and development. And in organisations that don't have career opportunities or there are no obvious steps, that can create a sense of demotivated person, not a clear direction in their career, and people need to wonder, is that the place that they want to stay?
There's three points I was given one time that I think is a really good pointer for how you should look at a job. If you're looking at a new job now, for example, job satisfaction, career progression, financial remuneration.
Yeah.
If you have two out of three of those, apparently you're doing well. If you don't and you only have one, you got to look around. If you have all three, you're on the pig's back.
Yes, indeed. Money often is the obvious one. And yes, of course, money is there. But once you're earning enough or that you can be happy with, all of those other things certainly become much more important, that there's a sense of development and a sense of recognition. And in organisations where there mightn't be a whole load of opportunities, it's important that staff are given variety in their jobs, they're given opportunities to take on new roles. Or if somebody is sitting there listening and saying, well, I haven't had a development in my job recently, I'd be saying, well, push your boss to say, can I try something new? Can I try this? Could I potentially do a course? So that it doesn't have to be a step up the ladder, but it could be a skill development and a knowledge development.
And big point in all of this, Owen, is that fine line between being competitive, healthy competition, and then the bitching that can go on, men and women, and sly tactics. I mean, where is that fine line between being ambitious, working hard, and then crossing that line?
Well, I think, again, no more than I think competition is good in the workplace, I certainly think ambition is very important for people, because again, it drives you on, it tries to keep you better. So I view it as very positive. I think if you're looking at it in the workplace, ambition is people trying to learn as much about the job, people trying to take opportunities for personal development. I think if you're looking where you cross the line is, again, where you begin attacking a colleague, bad-mouthing them, or, which is always a little bit more sneaky, telling a boss that I might be worried about Mary, which is talking negative things. I've had a couple of encounters where, for example, a woman came and that a colleague of hers was telling her boss that she was worried about her. So she was being very caring, but
was
putting questions in the boss's mind. She heard about this, my client, and my advice to her is, well, you have to nip it in the bud straight away. And I think if you find that there is bitching going on or something like that occurring, that the best, you have two options. Mm. Option one is do nothing and see what happens. I don't think that's risky. Mm. And option two is confront it in a calm, clear and specific way. So rather than saying, I think you're saying this, that if you have a couple of specific examples of I heard and you said this, it can again provide a bit of evidence to back that up. And I think that's where you begin to cross the line into ruthlessness or unnecessary competition. But people are very good at picking that out. And that's where I always have a hesitancy about bitchiness and things like that in the workplace. It might work in the short term, but quick enough, the people around you begin to tell, well, Joey is that type of person, gives out about people, says things behind their back, takes projects. That's not the type of team player that everybody will want to work with over a long period of time. So short term, yes, of course it might work, but longer term it's a dangerous strategy.
Good. I like to hear that. I hope that is the case.
Well, every time you encounter somebody, whether it's in the workplace or in life, you're building or unbuilding a relationship. Things are either getting better or getting worse. And if you're thinking we're going to be working until we're 67, you're going to have a lot of relationships built, hopefully, or unbuilt, and you would hope that you're gaining and increasing your network rather than decreasing it through bitchiness.
I love the calmness of your advice, Owen. Thank you so much for joining us in this one. Again, that's Owen McDermott from the Communications Club.